past century. But you don't always get to see his Torah so directly. This is Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler is definitely a familiar name, I would imagine. The founder of what is now the largest yeshiva in America and the fastest growing city in New Jersey, and the Lakewood world. It's all because of the efforts of Rav Aaron Cutler. So we're well acquainted with his impact as far as establishing a Torah institution. But it was well known that he personally was a great Talmud Chacham. And there actually are Sfarim that over the past few years have been released. You know, it's an institution called Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, which has published some of his Shirim. But I think, as far as I'm aware, the oldest of them, some of the most established as far as this is concerned, happens to be about our subject this year, Hilchos Shcheinim. So there is, so we haven't decided yet, so I wanted to introduce it into the conversation. So there is this volume of Mishnas Rabbi Aaron, what it looks like, on Hilchos Shcheinim, on the Rambam that deals with our Prakim, first two Prakim Bava Basra. And he has a piece here where he goes through very helpfully about just what are all the parameters of Nene and all the related concepts. So just read to you some selections to go through it a little bit. And if you saw the sources this morning, I think many of you got through many of the sources this morning. So he addresses some of these points, and he has this section here, which has a title, very helpful background for us, Bir Gidre Hachiyuv Ben Nene Mamun Chavero Mishtar Shivi Yorim. So the whole, what are the parameters of when somebody is obligated to pay back for a benefit that he has gotten from others in the various categories. So first, he makes reference to the Gemara in Bava Kamma and Daf Kuf Aleph that you saw today, right, which talks about tzemer and some manim. So if you have wool and you have dye, and they impact on each other, for good or for bad. So what happens, the Gemara is trying to figure out, does the dye have any independent value to it that can be extracted literally or economically from wool that it has been combined with? So the Gemara goes back and forth, if you saw, trying to figure out what exactly is the status of such dye. And we're talking about somebody who stole it, stole the dye, stole the wool, forcibly combined them, etc., etc. So ultimately the Gemara concludes that who is the perpetrator here?
A monkey.
Curious George, right? The monkey. So a monkey ends up combining them. So then the question is there room to demand the dye back after the monkey, or the value of the dye, after the monkey has caused them to be combined? So if you look at the Rambam, which I asked you to see, the Rambam in the third parak of Hilchos Gezeila. So how does the Rambam record the case? Right, do you recall?
Regular person combined.
Regular person, where'd the monkey go? He was not a Curious George fan. So that's itself interesting. And he writes here, Rav Aaron, Sarach Lahavin Tam Hashmato. We have to understand who stole the monkey. Why did the monkey get removed from the Rambam's formulation? Now, many of you took note that the Rambam discussed there a concept which appears many times in Hilchos Mamonos, and many of you were curious about the concept of Tfisa, that there the bottom line was that there wasn't an obligation to return the dye, but in Tafas lo mafkina mine, that if the one who lost it grabs it, that's what tafas literally means. And tfisa, just to say a sentence about it, is a complicated concept that the Gemara often brings this up, that sometimes Beis Din is not willing to take a stand and to say that one party has to pay the other. But there's still room for individual initiative. That if the individual who feels he, and there's a lot of accountability here, Klapei Shmai, a person has to really know that he has some degree of entitlement, but that under some circumstances, if he decides, well, I'm going to take it, Beis Din does not have to enforce it, I don't need them, I can just take it. So would Beis Din then get involved in reversing the situation? So maybe we have these circumstances where the fact that Beis Din did not make the individual pay in the first place, it's not because they are wholly on his side. It's because there's not enough basis to extract it. But if it happens on its own, the parties end up taking their own action, so then Beis Din's not going to interfere in either direction. So as the Magid Mishnah just explains that point, the Rambam's reference to Tfisa, he says that because ultimately the Gemara doesn't conclude, it's a Ba'igul Ishrut in the Gemara. So that essentially leaves it as a suffix. So a suffix like that means Beis Din is not going to compel action, but it's also not going to reverse somebody else's action because it's a suffix both ways, and maybe that guy was right. Which doesn't necessarily address the propriety of Tfisa. It doesn't necessarily say that a person who takes such action is justified, but it means that when it happens, so to, for you to say that Beis Din should actively remove it from that guy and give it back to the first guy, well, we don't know that the first guy really owns it either. So it may mean that it's not necessarily proper for the individual to be toe-face, but still, Beis Din can't get involved because they can't say that there really was an unjust lekicha. How's that? Your question?
A little different. You said that
Ron
leaves out the case of the monkey.
Yeah.
Is the that statement of Ravina a rejection of the last
it
case?
Sounds it like seems, it. It sounds like all the cases were missing something. All the cases
the last
had
case
a problem.
And, well, it says, lo tzvicha, dizal, it depreciates, and it gives you an ibayrema. So it seems like that works out. And then
maybe ibayrema, the language sounds like this is just an alternative suggestion that could be equal.
That's what to me, and then Rambam is, because the statement of the Rambam is also not just that it's no monkey, but it's two things taken from one person, not from two separate people.
Okay.
So it seems like he's quoting last case.
So let's see, that might be the answer. Let's see how to develop a little bit. So it goes on here to explain, Ravina, so let's try to figure out how all these things work. So it says, the Gemara, Baba Kamla, Nun Ches. Right, so there you saw also, I think, right, that it talks about, let's say your cow falls into somebody else's field and he ends up eating and he also ends up damaging the stuff that he lands on. So the Gemara discusses those various scenarios. So whether he has to pay for what he ate, that's one question. But what about what he landed on? Right, so does the cow owner have to pay for that? Right.
Well, so Rav initially says that you only have to pay for what you damage, not what you ate, and then we say that Rav's position is untenable, otherwise you're never high for eating, so we reverse it.
Right, so once it's reversed, so what about the damage? So do we see that as Mavriya Chari? That basically you're just chasing away a problem, right? So we saw other Gemaras that invoked the term of Mavriachari, and there the general presumption was that Mavriachari is normally what? Pater, right? That the beneficiary of Mavriachari is able to say, I wouldn't have done this necessarily. You chased away a lion? I didn't ask you to chase away the lion. I like lions on my property. Maybe I do, who knows? You never asked me. Maybe I like lions. So maybe the Gemara draws a distinction that maybe you'll say that normally Mavriach Ari Minichse Chavero Midaito Hai Lav Midaito. Right, that when an individual willingly decides that I am going to make an effort to extend myself to protect you, I understand that you're not chayav for that, so therefore I'm willingly to do this. Or Inami, the Gemara said another possibility, Mavriach Ari less leip seda highest leip seda. So maybe there's a difference when there is a loss and when there isn't a loss. So it's actually a little bit goes to Al's previous point when the Gemara has the two answers. So is the assumption that one answer is wrong or one answer is right? So here Rav Aaron writes about this, Hare the Shnei Terutzim Elu Pliki Bepturah de Mavriach Ari. So it sounds like these two answers are arguing in the nature of the exemption of the beneficiary of Mavriach Ari. The idea that you don't have to pay when you got some negative benefit, you know, your prevention of a negative situation, that according to the first answer, Mavriach Ari Midaitai Pater, that the p'tur is only when the person did it knowingly. After Malkum Dislip say, it sounds like even if there is a loss. And the only time there's ever going to be a liability is when the situation happened without this guy choosing. As we see from the situation of the cow that fell into the garden. But Tira says, Shani, but according to the second answer, it's not about Lav Midaito or Shmidaito, it's not about whether the person chose to or not. That even a person who chooses to help you by chasing away, if he undertakes a loss, so then there's a chiyuv. And only in a situation where there's no loss, that's when we say pater. So two possible modifications of this rule of Mavriach Ari based on the Gemara. That the idea that, and Mavriach Ari itself, right, just to keep in, things in focus, is itself a limitation on the din of yored. So if I, and yored, as we discussed, might itself be a detail of the din of nene. So just to put everything in one framework. So we saw that if I benefit from you, I may or may not have to pay you, depending on the details. And if you actually do work to improve my field, I also may have to pay you, depending on the details. And that might be an extension of the idea of my benefit, that maybe your rate I have to pay when there is a reason to believe that if I had been consulted, I would have hired you. Right, so that much we saw last week. But we've also seen that your aid seems to only affect when it was an active improvement. But if somebody is your aid into my field to chase away a lion, so then I'm not chayiv for that. And we saw, we mentioned that it may depend, it may be different levels, that if it's the kind of thing that I undeniably would have paid for, that might be a different story. But that maybe there's just enough deniability that you can't make me pay. So now, within that category of somebody chasing away a problem, we see there might be one or the other exception to that. That if it wasn't that the person did it willingly and undertook it knowing that I'm not going to pay, that might make a difference. Or if he incurs a loss in doing this, that might make a difference. And it sounds like from the Gemara it's one or the other exception. Either one or the other might be an exception to Mavriach Ari.
Yes.
So that goes to Al's point, also the question, how do you read when the Gemara says it could be this or it could be that? So does it always mean, this, you know, a little bit goes to our earlier discussion also about reading things, that, and it's hard to say that there's an absolute indicator one way or another, that, and this, you know, really goes into more analytical aspects of reading, that when, just to try to think about this in the abstract because you're bringing it up. So when you have two answers in Rishonim, let's say, even before you get to a Gemara, we have two answers. So does it have to mean that the answers argue on each other? So the frequent assumption you find is yes. Which one do you want to comment on that? So the frequent assumption you find is yes. So let's say a Tosfos gives you two answers because something is not fully, something is not fully satisfying about the first answer. But it should all depend on the context. You know, it could be that if you're just trying to say, no, this is not a question, I could think of a whole bunch of scenarios where it would make sense, A or B or C or D. So then they all could be true. So a part of it is, the reason you would think one excludes the other is because when a sugya is coming as a chiddush, you know, a case is coming to tell you something new, and you're trying to figure out, well, why is that new? Because I already was aware of that from something else. So we're saying, no, this is different. This is what differentiates it. So then the question is, okay, so then you're saying this is the whole point of the story. So then it becomes more compelling that it's either one or the other. Because you're trying to figure out what is the message of a certain din. Because I had some difficulty in knowing what the message was. And then you can say, well, maybe the message is XYZ, or maybe it's ABC. Then it presumably has to be one or the other.
I'm saying Tosfos have a kasha on saying it's only second.
Right. Same way a Tosfos. You say a Tosfos, with Tosfos there might be more room to say it could be both, even though you often find later as far as I'm assuming it's one or the other. But you could argue sometimes and say, no, but if they're just trying, if the Tosfos brought up the question, or the Gemara says it did. And Tosfos says, wait a minute, that contradicts a different din. And we'll say, well, no, maybe it does, it doesn't contradict it in situation A or in situation B. So A and B could both be true. These are just various cases where we can accommodate the two sources. But when the Gemara brings, Gemara's trying to figure out what does a certain din apply to. And we have all kinds of difficulties. And then we say, well, actually, no, maybe it's coming to tell us this. Or maybe it's coming to tell us that. So then it's on a more fundamental level. It's trying to figure out what is the message of this din. It's not like a Tosfos asking from some other source where maybe the kasha didn't have to exist in the first place. It's a part of the etzem ha-discussion of what this message is. So to say the message is A means that it's not B. Meaning that the whole discussion wasn't forced by the kasha. It was an effort to try to understand it in and of itself. Make sense? So he's assuming that one chiddush the other here is true. So, what do you do with that? So he writes, "Harei b'tzehechrech tzarech tzarech lomar dehad dechanan." That was the opinion that poter b'peirei achovo. Right. So chanan pater is when somebody pays off the debt of another person. So afal pi deisleip seida. Right there, the guy who pays off, he's got a loss. Hainu, so why does he pater in that case? Right, so if you say that when there is a exemption, according to Chanan, Chanan says you have to, that somebody who chooses to pay off somebody else's debt is not going to be entitled to compensation. But that guy has a pseida, so doesn't that reject that opinion of the Gemara? So we'll say, no, that's because in that situation, lo bari hazeka. That maybe the guy says, I wasn't planning on paying off this loan for whatever reason. So you didn't actually save me anything. So why should I pay? Well, kamo shakos v'tos v'sham v'shem v'sham, so tos v'sham 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 v'sham. However, according to the first answer, so that you have to pay what you enjoyed, because it's a bracha sari that was not done willingly. And that's the distinction, willingly or not willingly. So then, anything done willingly is still pater. So that would be like paying off somebody's debt. Even if it were a situation where you knew 100% that you did save this guy from expenses. Amnam, he goes on to say, Hare ikr hach milsa de machakinem b'teres rishon b'en avriach ari medaita de pater. This whole distinction between intentional and not. So that we need to explain. What's that about? The Ezel Ptur who said to us, the fact that somebody chose to do it. Okay, so what? Why is that a Ptur? Why does that matter? It doesn't impact the beneficiary. The beneficiary has to pay. So then, why does it matter whether the guy chose to or not? So here he refers to the Shach. The Shach in Kufchav Ches, it's not the Shach I gave you to look at, Shach, that had the potter b'mavriach midaito, the idea that you're going to be potter if you chose to take on this task. Why is that? What's the real basis for the potter? What do you think it is? What do you think he's going to say, based on if it's all based on you chose to do it or not? What's the reason for it? What would you think? Why should this matter?
Willing to take the loss,
right? So here's Mishum Vitur Mechilo Mitzad Mavriach. the guy who's doing this was Michael, that I realize that you're not going to pay me back, and I'm taking on this expense knowingly. So apparently I'm entitled, but I'm Michael. So therefore, knowing, getting into the situation, knowing what the story is, that's Mechila. That's what it sounds like from the Shach. So ask Rav Aaron, that's very difficult. Because when it comes to Mudar Hana, so that source to Gemara Nedarim last week, and when it comes to somebody who is not supposed to be benefiting another person, so there it's explicit that Havrachas Ari is Mutar in that case, even when the Mavriach is taking a loss. And that's what emerged from the Gemara Nedarim Lama Gimel that you saw last week, that somebody who pays off the debt of somebody else is okay, because it's just considered chasing away a lion. And further, when Hanan and Chachamim had the machlokas and the Gemara in Suvis about somebody who supports the wife of another person, so there also it seems like it's not about Vitor. It's not about Mechil. So what's going on? So says Rav Aaron as follows. It says, Nira Babir Hadavar. It seems, in explaining the matter, that based on what Tosfos writes in this sugya of the mixture of the dye and the wool. Right, and this Tosfos you saw before the Gemara, we had reported in the earlier sources, Tosfos in Bava Kamma. So Tosfos says, Tema, Hare Nanesh et Samaro Mu'ula B'damim Yoyser. Right, so what about the fact that he's benefiting? Because his wool is worth more now. V'yishalim asha neneh kamo achlo mitayich harachavav enough lugina. Right, so why don't we say that you should at least pay the benefit you get, like your cow that fell into somebody else's field? Why don't we say that somebody chose to dye your wool, so now your wool is more beautiful and more valuable, that you should be obligated to pay for the benefit the same way you pay for your cow's food when he fell into the field? So we could say, Dahana Dahacha Ein ba al yidei maisav, v'lo al yidei behemta. So that the hana in this case didn't come from his own action, nor did it come from his animal. Apparently, his animal's action is also counted as his action. But here you have neither. Right, in the case of dying with a wife. Right, so here you don't have either. So this is a tosis. You recall we saw it before we saw this gemara. A tosis that makes that condition. In Nena, that Nena, there has to be some kind of action that brings it into your choice, or even your animal's choice. Ubir hadvarim da tosus overim the chiyuv tashlumi de Nena who ach v'raksha Nena loikeach ana, that the obligation of Nena is when the recipient did something, and that means that it holds the ein hachiyuv de Nena about etzem hana bovat. So it's not that the obligation is for the hana. Ella degam chiyuv zel begedu chiyuv mazik. But actually, it is related to mazik, right? And that's where it's doing in Bava Kamma, that it's related to the responsibility, the ability somebody has for doing something. And the chiyuv l'shalim hashanenehu ba'av l'kichas ha'anah. So you're not paying for the benefit; you're paying because you took the benefit. That it is related to the notion of mazik. And therefore, and he notes they're still not subject to all the other rules of Mazik, but it's part of the world of Mazik. And therefore, if there's nothing that you did, not you or your actions or your animals, nothing under your responsibility, nothing under your watch was done, so then you're Pater. However, Tosfos in the second answer disagrees with this. And the Shach Shin Sari Aleph, which I gave you to see today, also disagrees. And they hold that there is a Chiyuv Nana even for something that happens automatically, without your actions, right? You saw that Shach today. It says that it disagrees with this. So the Shach had quoted the Rush, and ultimately said he doesn't think that that is the Din. So basically, Tosfos is saying that there needs to be some action is basically putting it in the rubric of mazik. That just like mazik, either something you did, or at least you have responsibility for something your property did. So nene is an aspect of that, which is very interesting, right? You could have thought it was different. You could have thought that it was basically about just what you benefit from. You're paying for what you benefit from. But when you have a credible argument that you're not interested, so then you're off the hook. But if you do something to express your interest, so then you have to pay. So this is a different spin on it, saying basically it's an aspect of your action in the spirit of you took the hana. So he goes on to explain. He says, Chi of nene shtayach b'shnei ofan. There's two types. One, the hana for the item itself that you got for somebody else's things, somebody else's action or somebody else's property. Two, misad shemishtar shile. What does that mean, ishtar she? Right, so you saw that in the Gemara in Chulin. And also, what does that mean? It means that kol sheni tosif lo mamon al yedei mar chaver. You have now more value, more assets before than before because of what your friend did. Chashiv ki'ilu nishar etz lo mamon chavero. So then it's as if that person basically invested in you. If I did something, and now there are greater assets between us, so then I have the right to say, you owe me. You have my money embedded in your property. And that's why you have to pay. You have my money. And where do you see this? You see this in Chulin Kuf Lamed Aleph, that even though somebody is Pater, if he is Mazik Mamon Kahuna, but if he ends up enriched through it, so then he's got to pay for that. Which essentially then leads to the conclusion, he says, the fact that one could disagree with Tosfos and to say that there is an obligation for Nene even when it happens automatically, that's for this other principle of Mishtarshe. Because then it's as if you now have the money of somebody else. Uvizah kol inyan chayiv l'shali mitzad tviyas mamoni gabach. V'kohecha delochash, but if there's no actual monetary value. Ela danu boyim l'chayivu bar etzim hana. We just want to come and charge you for the hana, the fact that you benefited without getting richer. As gam l'didon k'shana v'om emeila pater. So then, even if you don't agree with Tosfos, you would say that there is a need for it to have been result of some action. Okay, so basically, we're about out of time. All I want to do is I will, at a quicker pace, tell you tomorrow how this ends. But just to make sure that we are up to speed, so just to quickly recap. So what did we see? So we explored what it means to have this obligation of Yored and Nene, and how Yored has limitations to it, because if it's negative, so then there is a Ptur, that you don't have to pay for a service that somebody did that just solved a problem, but didn't actually improve things. But we see that there might be exceptions. So if the person who did the work didn't choose to, it just happened against his will, or he incurred a loss, one or the other possible ramifications. So why should it matter if he chose to or if he didn't choose to? So that, the Shach explained, that he was mochel. But is mochel really a thing here? So we have to figure that out. So in order to address that, so he explored the whole notion of nene and the machlokas about whether there has to be an action or not. So, and that's very much relevant to our Gemara, right? Because our Gemara writes that there is a chiyuv for the guy who has the fourth wall added, but the conclusion is it doesn't matter whether he puts the fourth wall or the other guy puts the fourth wall. So that seems to revolve around the question of, does he have to do anything here? So if he does something, okay, so then fine, he shows he's interested. And the view of Tosfos on this Gemara and Bava Kamma is that you always need either your action or there to be your animal's action, there needs to be something for the nana to be chayiv. But a nana that just happens automatically is not going to be your chayiv. So one interpretation was that that just shows that the nana is significant. Rav Aaron mentions here another possibility that it means that it's basically a subset of the din of mazik, and that you need to at least have some source for liability. But being that the Shach and others disagree with this condition of Tosfos, how do you address that? That we need to explain somehow. So he started to explain that really there's two types of hana. There's the hana that would require some kind of action, but the hana that wouldn't, that the Shach assumes there still could be a chiyuv for, that specifically is when there is a monetary increase. And therefore, the nature of the chiyuv is that since you now have more assets, you have more value, the one who provided that has the right to say, okay, so give me my part. You have more money because of me. So I'm an investor, and I also want some. So how does that end up affecting things? And we'll see how does that come back specifically to our Gemara and views in Rishonim, specifically in Bava Basra. So God willing, we will fill that in tomorrow. Do we have a new volume?